You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's, with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I am joined today by Ellie Woods Marshall. Ellie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thanks so much for coming on. Now you are one of the few people in this podcast that I've actually met in person. As we met at the Hirschsprung's conference, it's got to be about a month ago, I think, as we sit here and record this. So you are actually somebody I have met in person now. We are going to go through your story. You have Hirschsprung's, total colonic Hirschsprung's. We're going to go through your story and then little bits and pieces to do with that as well. So if you wouldn't mind sort of taking us, I guess, right from sort of the beginning, really.
Yeah, I can try. my parents have tried to inform me a little bit, but it's a bit patchy, but as you mentioned, I have total colonic Hirschsprung's, so the whole of my large intestine and 40% of my small intestine is gone. So when I was asking my mum last night, around four major surgeries. The first one was when I was 12 hours old or something like that, so it's very quick. And then I had around 11 sort of more minor surgeries. So I grew up, so I was in Alderhay, where the conference was, where Tom and I met. There's a siren in the background. You can cut that out.
No, I can't hear it. It's fine.
Okay, that's good. I grew up under the care of Alderhay. So I was in and out of hospital I lived in hospital for the first two or three years. And then I was in hospital every few weeks till I was maybe five or six, with viruses and all things like that. I've lived a fairly normal life. I guess we can go into that a little bit. Absolutely. About what that's like. It would be interesting to talk about more the mental health kind of connections and things that I've experienced, being a young adult and then going into adulthood. That's kind of where the things I remember are more in that aspect.
So, well, let's dive into that then. Let's go into that straight away. Because I think the link between mental health and chronic illness in general is huge. I mean, that doesn't take a genius to work that out, but it is huge. But I think in terms of gut health and the link between gut health and the brain is enormous. There's some research done on it. Not this huge amount that I can see, but there is research done on it, and I think that is massive. What's your sort of overriding thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's sort of two aspects. From what I'm definitely no scientist. My background is not in science, so as you say, I've read different research that's happening, and it feels like the link between gut health and mental health is not new, but it's kind of being explored at the moment, which means that I imagine, there's going to be lots of papers in 20 years that explain the different links, but at the moment it's still fairly unknown. But I guess for me, I've grown up, so I have OCD. So I got diagnosed with OCD around 12 years old. And I do think there's quite a big link, not necessarily a biological link. I don't know about that, but kind of the social aspect of Hirschsprung's and how it affects you. I think growing up in hospital from my early years as well, probably impacted the way that my brain works now, and that I understand the world. I think it'll be interesting to see in the future what they find out about, and if there's any medications or anything like that, because for example, I've been on antidepressants for various things, and even that, it's unclear with how it absorbs in the gut and like how it works, because obviously dates are missing. So it probably impacts the way that like different medications work and things like that. But I think, I guess I can talk a bit about at school and things like that. I think one of the things I realized when I first joined the Hirschsprungs group, because I spoke to Louisa, I'm sure she won't mind me saying this, was that we had really, really similar experiences. And I found that I think a lot when I was younger, I was pushing down the Hirschsprungs thing. I was like, oh, it's not a big deal. It just means I go to the toilet more than everyone else. Like, it's not a big deal. And actually, for me anyway, it had a huge social impact. It impacted the food that I was eating. I was also dairy-free till I was around 8, which actually, me and my parents didn't realize this. It's actually quite common for Hirschsprungs children to have allergies, dairy allergies, egg allergies, things like that. Which, again, doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you're 6 and you're going to McDonald's and you can't eat the food that everyone else is eating, it's just like kind of compounds into one big thing. I think also using the toilet a lot, it's like there's a lot of stigma around just talking about going to the toilet, talking about going to the loo, which I'm sure you understand as well. And I'm sure a lot of people listening will understand. So I think when I was younger, I was just very embarrassed and I had like a lot of shame, which I think can manifest if you don't talk about it, into other stuff later on, like mental health stuff. But from what I understand, when I was at the conference, I hear that there's a lot more mental health support for kids now, like from the beginning, because I think when I was younger and probably when you were younger as well, that wasn't even a thought. It was just like, do the surgeries, get it done, hope they're okay, and then like look after them health-wise. But obviously there's a whole other side with the brain that needs to be considered nowadays.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think very much, because you're mid-20s, aren't you? So
yeah.
And obviously I'm a little bit older, but that whole kind of looking after the whole person is a lot more prevalent now than it was. It was very much, as you said, everything was physical. Everything was kind of like, right, let's get this done, fix this to this, take that out, tie this up, etc.
Which makes sense. It's absolutely good gun, but it's, yeah, there's like the whole other aspect, as you mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously keeping the patient alive is the most important thing. So you can see why people went down that route. But I think you're right in terms of there's a lot more focus on the mental well-being of the patient and also the mental well-being of the parents, because I think that's something that also gets completely missed. And actually, whilst your child is going through X, Y, and Z, it takes a toll on the parents as well, I think. I think... That's something, and I know you alluded to it there with the conference, but that's something that's really, really important. They've sort of stepped up in the last 5 or 10 years, something like that.
Yeah, I think obviously I can't speak to my parents. Maybe that's a whole other episode. Can't speak for them, but I think, yeah, absolutely. There's obviously the staff at Older Hay. I don't know if any of them have been listening, but they are like incredible. And also I got to meet, kind of re-meet Simon Kenny, who was, one of the people that did a lot of my operations. So he was like, I think he was a registrar at the time, but he's like Professor Simon Kenny now. So he was like presenting at the conference. But it was amazing to meet him, and my parents were also there at the conference as well. And they got to meet him, and it was strange because, obviously I knew him, like I felt like a sense of familiarity, but it was this kind of surreal experience, to be honest. But my parents, I think going to the conference, I realized like how much of an impact this like whole journey has had on my parents as well, just because they were getting quite emotional. And I think, yeah, as the person with the condition, you can sometimes, I've sometimes forgotten that they were also there, and they can remember a lot more than me. So I think that support for families is like absolutely vital. which is, you know, something that we're hoping to figure out between us as well, like setting up hopefully some sort of buddy up support group for patients and families and things like that. So
yeah, well let's tell people about that. I mean that's something that you and I have been sort of working on for the last month, give or take. And we know it's going to be a sort of slow progress type thing, but yeah, it's kind of, well, it was your idea, so I just sort of glommed on top. But yeah, do you want to sort of talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think one of the things, kind of growing up, I wish that I could see someone that kind of was similar to me but older, who had gone through the same things and I could ask questions to. And I think obviously I had my parents and I had the doctors and nurses, but it doesn't feel the same when you don't have like a peer who you can like feel like you feel connected to and feel like a sense of representation. And I think if I'm going to admit this, when I went to the conference, I was like, I just want to find someone my age. And then I was sat in the waiting room before, and I got a bit emotional because I couldn't see any, I could just see babies and families in the beginning, just in the waiting bit. And I was like, oh, like, and I didn't realize how much I was like hoping to find someone that was similar to me. And obviously it was really great. There was children and families there, but I was just really hoping to like find a friend. And luckily that obviously you were there and also Zoe was there. And that was just so cool to meet people that have similar experiences. And then, yeah, kind of as I've grown up, when I was younger, I wanted that person. And now I kind of want to be that person because I've never been able to find someone older. So if we can set up this group, the idea is to have like a buddy up scheme. So I think from what I heard, at the conference, just so many people are looking for just kind of an informal way to connect with other families and patients, a way for young people, like children and young people, to find connections with people with the same condition, but also a way for families just to like breathe around. Like, because I feel like when, I don't know, even in that room where everyone was together, it felt like there was a sense of shared understanding. And, you know, like small things, like if my tummy was rumbling, which is like a thing that I get a lot. I don't know how common that is with Hirschsprungs. I've spoke to a lot of people, but like it's very, very loud. And like in exams and stuff, it used to be so loud and everyone was staring at me and my face would be going red. And like when that happened in the conference, I felt like even if people, I don't even know if people heard, but like I wouldn't be bothered because like everyone there would understand, if that makes sense. So I think having like a shared space, like we suggested doing the buddy up scheme and then like maybe doing like events like picnics and things like this in the summer. And I think even if it's not about Hirschsprungs, it's just nice to be in a space where everyone kind of gets it and like you can talk about it openly and it's just not a big deal.
Yeah. No, I think your idea is fantastic. And I know we have a Facebook group that people can join, and we're hopefully going to start sort of setting up events in the next, maybe this year or so.
Yeah, hopefully.
But I think, like we said, it's going to take quite a while. I wouldn't be expecting sort of
lots of things to consider.
Yeah, not something in the next couple of weeks or something, one couple of months. But I think, like you said, the idea of just having someone there who is maybe roughly a similar age to you that can relate, because you can, like you said, you can talk to parents, you can talk to friends, you can talk to doctors, but they haven't been through what you've been through, you know. And everybody's Hirschsprung's story is different. If it wasn't, I'd be out of a podcast after episode one. So I'm glad everyone's is different, but you have that sort of shared similarity from people. And that sort of, and I guess that's where the conference was really, really helpful. Because I know that there wasn't a lot of people around that sort of, 20 to 40 age bracket that we would be in. And a lot of it, I guess, would have been or were mothers, fathers that were there, you know, obviously wanting to know, I guess, answers to a certain degree of what the future is going to be like. Like, and of course, the doctors couldn't say that. They can't say this is going to happen, that's going to happen, whatever. But I think there were a lot of families there, and of course, it was sold out as well. And it was sold out relatively quickly, which is fantastic. Which I think also leads into that buddy up scheme in the fact that there is the need and the want there for people to communicate more, to know more. It doesn't have to be, you know, a conference every single time.
Yeah.
But, you know, those take a lot of planning, and huge thanks to Alder Hay for that, because they were fantastic. But I think that wanting that sort of just a little bit of reassurance sometimes, I think, doesn't go amiss. But I think in terms of what we want it to look like, I don't know, not going to give a time frame on it, but roughly what we want it to look like, what would that be for you?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think it would just be, creating a space for those connections to happen, and also hopefully across the UK, like not just centered around, because I know we suggested doing it around Alder Hey or like in that sort of like northwest area, which is where I'm from Warrington. But when I put out the post, like, so many people from across the UK like were like, I'm from Leeds, I'd love to do this, I'm from like so many different places. So I think it would be really cool to like test it in one meetup, and then you know, hopefully it grow across the UK. And then Zoe also said that she'd love to do something in the US. So like, you know, I think with a rare condition, I think it can often feel like there's literally no one else. But like when you go on the Facebook page, there's so many people that are on that page, and families that are on that page. So there are people out there that get it. But yeah, hopefully we can set up something that's across the UK and then maybe even further afield as well. And we're looking to partner with charities that already have like connections in those areas and stuff. So if you're listening and you have some sort of connection, reach out to us, because that'll be really cool.
No, that'd be fantastic. And I love the fact that even though we haven't had one meetup yet, we're still going for world domination. I like that.
Yeah. You've got to set your sights high. Do you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're getting Zoe involved. We'll go for world domination. It'll be great. We'll have a buddy up system.
The hash browns.
Absolutely. Well, that's my aim. That's one of the aims of this podcast, I guess, is that when people do go to hospitals and they get diagnosed, or they go to see their GP, no offense to GPs at all, but a lot of GPs that you do see, and you mention the word Hirschsprungs, and they go, right, I'm going to have to look that up. You know, and often you know a bit more.
How to spell it.
Yeah, yeah. And often you know a bit more than they do about it. So, yeah. And just on that, I guess, before we move on to the next bit, you said in your story a little bit about the fact that you sort of played down Hirschsprungs quite a bit. I know that feeling, as I very much did the same. What was kind of your, obviously talking about bowel stuff with friends obviously is going to be a difficult topic, but was that sort of the main reason, or was there other sort of things associated as well?
I think there's like a few different parts. Like the bowel stuff is always hard to talk about. And I think, I think it's really easy to joke about. Hmm. Like people like to laugh about poo, like people do, because it's funny. But I think I got into a space where I was joking about it, but it meant that when I was actually ill or like experienced symptoms, people didn't take it seriously, because I obviously they wouldn't, because I've been joking about it, if that makes sense. So actually in the last few years, I've found I needed to express to like people that were close to me, like, you know, this does impact me. And like, it's really good that we can joke about it, but also here's how it looks for me. And I think that's like really helped me take it seriously and helped me actually make accommodations with myself in my life. It's like I've given myself permission to like take it seriously. Not that it's, you know, my life is not awful, and I'm really grateful for like that I'm managing, and like, you know, I'm able to do loads of stuff, which I'm sure we'll go into. Like I have a full-time job and I'm able to go into work and in the office and all that stuff. But like, still it does impact me daily, and things like sleep. Like I get up every single night at least 5 times to go to the loo, which like I would just always be like, oh, that's so funny. Like to my friends, I'd be like, oh, never get a night's sleep or something. It's like, no, actually, that's like, that's going to impact your mood, and like showing up to work at 9 a.m. when you've not slept. Or like sometimes I get up like over 10, 15 times at night. So it can look quite, yeah. It can look differently depending on how I'm doing. It's also like impacted by my period, like things like that people probably don't talk about. And it's like all these things that are like have stigma attached to them. So I think I just kind of pushed it down and ignored it for a long time. But it actually was really interesting to hear Zoe describe it at the conference as a chronic illness or like a chronic condition, which like I've actually found since then, I've actually been like, that's actually a really good way to describe it to people. I don't know how it's officially like, where it fits officially, but like I think chronic illness is like a really good way for people to understand, because it's like impacts you regularly, if that makes sense. Whereas I think if you say, oh, I had some surgeries when I was little, people are like, oh, well, it's out now, so surely it's fine. So yeah, I guess that's kind of the journey I've been on with it. And I think also something that I didn't anticipate is like when I met my boyfriend as well, it's like a whole other world of explaining, because I guess that like with friends, like obviously explain it, and but when you stay over at someone's house and like you need to go to the loo a lot, and like there's also like noises that you have to explain when you go to the loo and like different things like that, which like now I'm actually really good at communicating. But at the beginning I was like, I remember first time I went to my partner's family's house, and I didn't go to the loo for a whole day, and I because I was embarrassed and I didn't know which loo to use, and I was in so much pain. And I remember eating dinner for them for the first time, and I was like, oh my god, I'm making such a bad impression, because I couldn't even speak because I was in so much pain. And I obviously, they're absolutely amazing about it because I've explained it, but I think that initial, oh, what do I do? I don't know whether to go to the loo. I don't know where to go. Like, can be really hard. So, yeah, I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you make some really, really good points there. And I think it is socially as well. I don't think, again, we talked about the mental side, but also the social side of Hirschsprungs is also really, really important. And I think especially that, because a lot of people, again, associate Hirschsprungs with babies and with surgery and all of this kind of stuff, that actually it can still impact you across various parts of your life. And, you know, things like dating and friendships and things like that. You know, being open and talking about it is, I mean, obviously, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, well, we should all be open and all talk about it. It sometimes isn't that easy, you know.
It's hard, yeah.
And I think trying to find ways to describe Hirschsprungs as well is also really, really tricky. I know for me, I never really described it to my friends because, one, I didn't really know too much about it, but also because it was such a long-winded thing that you'd have to talk about. And it was kind of like, actually, I can't be bothered to stand here for 5 minutes and describe it to you.
Yeah. And I think, as you say, like, again, GPs are amazing and all the doctors and nurses and everybody that I've interacted with, great. But like, as you say, like when you go to the GP and they don't know what it is, it's like, how am I meant to explain it to my friends who don't have medical degrees? And like, my favorite memory is like when I went for an ultrasound, and when they were doing the ultrasound, the person was like terrified because they couldn't find my large intestine, because I don't think they'd like seen it on my notes, or maybe it wasn't on my notes. But that was like, that's like my ultimate, like, I think when, yeah, it feels like just constantly being like kind of misunderstood, so you're just like, I'm not even gonna explain it, it's fine.
Yeah,
but then that leads to the social aspect of like it being tricky. And I think another aspect of it is like body image as well. Like, I have a lot of scars, like huge scars on my stomach because I had quite a few operations, and like a couple of times where they went in a few times in the same spots, it looks a certain way. And like growing up, was very, very conscious of that. I, not saying this is why this happened, there's so many reasons, but I had an eating disorder when I was growing up as well, which like I do think body image wise probably was like related to the scars, like kind of why it started. And there was this like, I think I wanted to, this wasn't the only reason, but like I was confused why my stomach can never be flat compared to like all my friends, and like it's never going to be flat. It's got huge scars on it and scar tissue. So, but as a kid, you don't like, you're just like, why can't I be like everyone else? Why doesn't it look like this? So I think, yeah, like socially and mental health, it's all connected. But I think body image wise, because for example, when I joined the Hirschsprung's group, which I only joined about a year and a half ago, I kind of knew it existed, but I was like kind of scared, because it was, the reason I joined was because I was starting to have questions around like fertility and genetics, which was something that I was asking about at the conference. And that's the reason I joined. But actually, when I joined and made a post, I got so many messages all in one day from mainly mums, but just parents, asking, oh, did you have any issues with your body image? Or like, and like, my little girl has this, like, how did it impact you at school? It's like, that's like a massive part of it, the social side. Because obviously when the surgery is done, you can have, you know, there are medical sides to it, but like the social impact is like pretty huge. So I think that's where the Body Up scheme would be so cool, because like a young girl or young person could come to me and be like, how did you deal with like getting changed if someone asked you like, why does your stomach look like that? Or like, which toilet did you use at school? Because like, for example, I use like the staff disabled toilet, like things like that. But you just don't know unless you speak to someone who's been through the same thing, like how to navigate those situations.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you mentioned the Facebook group as well, because we have mentioned a little bit on the sort of negative side of the social aspect. But that's a really positive part, because kind of end up turning your condition, I guess, into more of a community. And then you feel like we said with the Buddy Up scheme and the conference, you kind of feel amongst your own peers as such. And then having that Facebook group, I guess there's a couple of sort of main ones out there. There's one that's got about 10,000, which is sort of across the world. Then there's the UK one, which Melissa Jones runs, who's been on this podcast before. And that's got about 2,000, just over 2,000 people on it. And sometimes I look at that and tend to feel a little bit lost. And I kind of go, wow, there's just so much info here that it's difficult to see the wood for the trees. But it is so, so important to have that kind of community. And that is a positive part. And I guess if you hadn't had Hirschsprung's, you wouldn't have found that social art. And so I think that's also really important as well.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I definitely... it's an interesting one, because when I was thinking about genetics and fertility, and I was like being given percentages of how likely like a baby that I had like could have would have it, it's like, it's really hard because like it's also part of me, and I don't know if I had a magic wand and I could get, I don't think I would, I don't know, like it's hard to say, but it's also obviously made me the person I am, and like mainly the connections that I had in hospital with the nurses and like the doctors, like I think that's made me who I am. Like, I don't know, it's just like it obviously shapes you. So I wouldn't change it, if that makes sense. And there are positives in terms of, yeah, you can build community and you can meet new people. And but yeah, I think it's just, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, interesting point you make about if you had a magic wand and would you change it? Because I've been through the same question myself and have asked lots of other people that question as well. And for what is essentially a chronic condition where there's not a huge amount of upside, certainly to begin with, a lot of people that I've spoken to and said, you know, would you change it? A lot of them have said, no, I wouldn't, because actually it's, you know, made me more resilient. It's brought me so many friends. It's, you know, the groups I'm part of, the people I've met, the, you know, the opportunities I've had just through having this condition. No, I wouldn't change it. I find that really, really interesting.
Yeah, I think, it, as you say, it becomes part of you, and it's hard to imagine what I would be like otherwise. And like, it's the same with my like various like mental health issues I've had throughout my life. It's like, I don't think I would change that either, because it's all part of me, and it's led to like me doing what I want to do in career and like being this, the type of person I am. So I don't think it's, yeah, it's definitely like not something I would change, and it's not something that's all negative. It's just something that we have to navigate, and I think the more people that we have to do it together, the better. Because
absolutely, it's kind of a strength in numbers. Absolutely. In terms of, I know you mentioned there about career and what you do in terms of your career, because one of the main things of this podcast, or one of the things I wanted to do, was to find people who, you know, go on and do, you know, really good jobs and careers and things like that, and show maybe people who've just had a child with Hirschsprungs, or maybe have a 1, 2, 3 year old with Hirschsprungs, actually there's so much that you can do, even though you're going through all of this surgery and appointments and all of this, that, the other. Look at all these people out here and look at all the wonderful things that they do. So in terms of career, how is yours?
Yeah, good, I think. So I work in digital marketing for a charity, food redistribution charity called Fair Share. I think as we were saying, like how the conditions like shaped you, I think like it's, I've always wanted to do something that like helps people in some way. So I've gone into the charity sector. I've worked in a couple of different charities. I worked for Comet Relief for a bit, worked at this charity now. Hopefully I'll still stay in that kind of sector. And I also help to run community, like free community knitting and crochet sessions. It's a bit random for this context, but so yeah, it's called Craft Forward. If anyone wants to get involved, Google it. But I think, yeah, I think it's maybe, no, I'm just thinking about this right now, but maybe it is, yeah, I think the more sort of lonely or like slightly isolated you feel, I think you just crave that community, and then like go into a career that's like about that, or have hobbies that really like help you build that. So I think it's related to that. And I'd say in terms of people listening that have young children or babies with the condition, and they're like, oh my gosh, there's a 25 and a 30 year old talking about it. And I think like one of the things that struck me when I was at the conference is when Simon Kenny came up to you, he was like, oh my gosh, you look so well. And I was like, yeah, like fair. Because I always think, you know, like I've had like body image stuff and like various things. I'm like, I never see myself in that, in the way that he will see me or the way my parents will see me, that like I've got this far, I've survived, and I'm looking well, I'm looking healthy. So like, I think that's a massive thing that I need to remember. And like a lot of people, yeah, similarly probably need to remember that they're just thriving by being able to like keep going and keep like battling through the various like things that they'll be going through with the condition and things like that.
Absolutely. And again, like I say to a lot of people, if people were to see you or I out in the street, they wouldn't know. They wouldn't know we had Hirschsprungs. So, I mean, that's also something we're again, back to the social and mental concept of having a lot of these scars and thinking, oh, you know, body image and et cetera, et cetera. if people see us out and about, they wouldn't know. Yeah. You know, so I think that's something that is really, really important. When people get self-conscious about scars, you know, people don't notice, people don't recognize, people don't ask, you know, because they don't know. So I think that's a really, really important point that you make. And the conference as well, one thing that I know we touched on previously, I've spoken to a few people about it and just how much it gave people in terms of support, comfort, information. I know you asked a lot of questions as well at the conference, which I thought was fantastic.
I put in many more than we ran out of time.
We did.
And it was embarrassing because I put in all these questions and I didn't realize they were going to be in a row. So, like, it's so bad. But I'm glad that we got to ask, but it shows how many questions people have, because like there's so many different topics. There's like, and also because there was people with babies there who like, they have questions about like, should we do the pull through or what impacts? And then there's like people like me, it's like genetics, fertility, like, do you know what I mean? So it's a huge range. And I think, yeah, people had a lot of questions, mainly me.
Yes.
I think asking questions is so important, and when you have the chance. But I think that's why, not to harp on about it, but like building that sense of community where, yeah, we're not going to have the medical answers because like I'm not going to have the latest research, but maybe we might be able to give a few tips and tricks that we've learned along the way from just living with the condition. And I think, sorry, just to go back to like the invisible element of it, I think that is also like something that's like people don't talk about a lot. Like for example, like using disabled toilets. One time I was like shouted at by a woman for using a disabled toilet, and I was literally holding a radar key, so I don't understand what was going on. But I think the it's definitely improved. I've noticed like there's a lot of like signs like on toilet doors saying like invisible disabilities exist, things like that, and like people seem to be more understanding. But I think that's just also something, like, use that disabled toilet if you need to, because, like, you should. And you're very much, you have every right to use it. And if it's something that would help, you should do that. And you should contact, like, your school, your college, your work, and tell them your accommodations, because that's something that I put, like, pushed off for a long time. And, like, if it just makes life a bit easier and, like, or just is something you need to do, you should do it.
Yeah. And it's something that I never, it never even crossed my mind to do that. And I think certainly for people our age, probably just never throughout our childhood, probably never even thought, you know, to use the disabled toilets and thought, well, I'm not disabled, you know, and, yeah, and look at it that way. But actually that's not the right way to look at it at all. And that actually we should be able to, And I think that's, yeah, no, I think you make a really, really good point there. I think that's really, really interesting. I think you're right when you say, you know, they are for us too. And we do have a chronic illness and an invisible illness. I mean, lucky us, but we do have both. And I think that is something that's really, really important. As we sort of circle around towards the end of this, I know we talked in and out a little bit more about the buddy system, and about how we'd like to see it, you know, grow, obviously, in terms of people. And I guess we haven't necessarily thought, right, what does it look like in this and what does it look like in that? And I guess we just want to sort of build a community. But if anybody's listening to this and they're thinking, oh, actually that buddy system sounds like quite a good idea, but might need a bit more info on it, what would you say?
Contact us. I guess that's the first bit. So I'm thinking maybe you can put our emails in, or people can DM the page, and then we can reach out. But I think, yeah, strength in numbers, as you said, as many people want to get involved as possible. And I think it will be just sort of leaning on different people's expertise. So like, if someone has done this sort of thing before, obviously that would be amazing. Or has any links to hospitals that would like be able to help us with events and things like that. I think it's just like, as you say, going to be a slow process, but I think it's something that's so meaningful. Well, I hope it is, like, and I've heard that people are saying that it would be. So if you're listening, especially if you're listening, and you would want to be one of the buddies, that would be really cool. Like, I think it'd be cool to get people that are a bit old, like our age, a bit older, to just be someone that can like provide support. And again, I don't envisage it being like a huge amount of commitment. It's more just like informal, being able to have a connection with families of patients, and hopefully just provide that like bit of just like feeling less alone and feeling a bit more connected to someone.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. And then in terms of you and your future, and talk to us a bit about work and about how, you know, how you've gone into marketing, how you've worked for various different charities, how you've ended up achieving a heck of a lot in the time that you have, and with Total Colonic Hirschsprungs as well. What do you see? I know we talked about the buddy system, but in terms of you personally, what do you want in the future?
It's a big question.
That is.
I'm not sure. I mean, like, I've always said, when I was in hospital, there was an amazing, I'm not sure what her like job title was, but I just knew her as like Shirley, because like that was the name. But she used to run art activities and like come around, and to be honest, mainly I just used to eat the glitter. That was like the main. It's just glittery poo. But mainly, she was like absolutely the coolest person ever to me. So I would love to one day run some sort of like art, fiber arts, like crochet, knitting thing in hospitals, for kids, which would be really cool. But that's like pipe dream vibes. We'll just like keep going on the normal programming for now, but I think that would be really, really cool. Or just like finding a way to support kids with long-term health conditions in some way.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you ever so much for coming on. Just one more thing before we go. Where can people find you? Where can people keep up to date with everything?
Yeah, I think just my Instagram. If you're going to tag me, and then also feel free to message me on Facebook as well, because I'm on the group, the UK group that I mentioned. I think I'm also on the other one as well. But feel free to message me, because I'm happy. I usually just copy and paste the questions and send them to my mum, because she's like better at answering them. So like specific questions. But yeah, and also I forgot to say, I mentioned Simon Kenny, but if Graham Lamont is listening, he's like my consultant when I was little. He's retired now, but he was also like, weirdly, when I went to London for the first time when I was 16, he was on a massive Tube poster, gave me a slight heart attack. He was like being promoted like as one of the doctors. It was just kind of crazy. But if you're listening, yeah, he obviously saved my life. So thank you. But yeah.
Well, hopefully he is listening. I hope so.
Tell him on email and then you will have to listen. Yeah,
definitely. Fantastic.
Thanks for having me on here as well.
No, not at all. Thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, wish you the very best with your crocheting and work and everything and health in the future.
You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.